Geekily Yoked is a proud member of the Crossover Nexus. To find more blogs and podcasts about the intersection of faith and pop culture, check out crossovernexus.com. Tell them Bilbo sent you.
So many ways to say I love you in different languages across the land. You haven't heard them all, so I'll tell you as only a true geek can.
Hello and welcome to Geekfully Yoked, the world's best married Christian geek podcast.
Woo!
As always, I'm Lehman Kessler.
I'm Rachel Kessler.
That's Mother Rachel Kessler.
I'm a priest here in the Diocese of Toronto with a PhD in medieval literature, which makes me a giant nerd.
I'm a stay-at-home dad and the owner and sole employee of the Cobalt Academy, which makes me...
Are you an owner of it? Are you incorporated?
I own it. I made it up.
Insofar as you own our child? And the house? Well, you don't even own the house!
But I own the idea. I own the dream of the Cobalt Academy. The dream of the Cobalt Academy is alive in Portland.
Toronto.
Portland, Toronto, yes. Rachel, how have you been? How did Easter and all of its craziness treat you? Do tell.
That was what it was. It was a lot of me hovering over the toilet going,
We were a house of sadness.
It's pretty grim. A good time to get sick when you're a priest.
No. But we had my family in town.
Yes.
They helped to look after a little one. Luckily, we started being less sick by the time they showed up. So yeah. It wasn't, they didn't just come into a plague den, which was useful.
It's true.
Do you have
you any... never actually threw up, though.
No, I didn't. I had other problems. But since it's a family show, we will not go into it. Even though families are gross.
Because families are
we
gross.
We have a baby, and that baby is gross.
It did all begin on Tuesday of Holy Week, middle of the night. We walked into... We woke up to a baby screaming and a crib full of vomit.
Yeah. I never thought that I would have to wonder why there was egg in my child's ear. But that's just what parenting...
Just a chunk of egg in her ear?
Yeah. Oh, babies. Oh, their horrible, horrible bodily functions.
That was the night we went through 3 crib sheets.
Yeah.
Ooh. Did you black that out?
Well, it's a blur of awful and babies and sadness. But you know what? It's a good thing. It's preparing us for when she's bigger, and therefore her emesis will be that much bigger.
But she'll also be more self-sufficient.
Yeah, but I mean, when I'm sick, I turn into a baby. So I
just
mean,
burped.
You did. Well done. So
we're keeping it real here.
It's a classy program. We're in the Easter season. Everything is, what's the color now? Is it white? Is it gold? I don't even know.
White and gold are liturgically the same.
There you go. I'm trying to figure out if I can make a joke about the black and blue dress now.
Probably not.
No, is that past its prime?
I think that I find with the internet and the memes, the flame that burns so bright can only burn so long.
Like Blade Runner.
Sure.
Have you been doing anything fun this last 2 weeks, Rachel, aside from being
vomiting?
Sick and Easter? Did you learn anything exciting and epiphanous about this Easter season?
Are you baiting me for something? Because I'm really not sure what you're going for.
No, it's Easter.
Jesus, he's good.
I'm a fan.
You need anything more than that?
I guess not. Easter is the reason for its season?
Sure.
There we go.
We had like a spring day today.
We did have a spring
day. As opposed to when we were at the Easter Vigil lighting the new fire and it started snowing.
Yeah, snow at Easter definitely...
I know that it's a thing and I know we live in Canada, but it always makes me sad when there's snow on Easter.
It's always a surprise.
Yeah.
It is.
I'll never get used to snow on Easter.
I feel like when we had the Kolars up, they were outraged by the amount of snow on the ground during Easter.
Yeah, probably.
So with that preamble, should we start maneuvering our way towards our nice light topic?
Sure. We were like, We're like, we're sort of behind in podcasts, and what are we going to talk about? We'll do something light and fun, like...
bioethics.
Yeah, I don't know where it is. This is, sorry, this is what you're getting, folks.
Well, I see, I just, we thought about doing bioethics, like, a couple months back, and I made notes. And by notes, I mean, like, one...
It's one little sticky tab on his computer.
But... also the fact that...
That's what you need to know here at Geekly Yoked and our level of preparedness and the hours of preparation we do for
this
our podcast.
This is more preparation than I normally do.
I know! I'm just saying, by way of comparison...
Like when you asked me to name a sacrifice in pop culture and I just stared at you.
I'm just using it to illustrate the... that this is a heavy level of research.
We like to just allow the Holy Spirit to move through us and guide this podcast and take it where it needs to go, not where we need for it to go.
Okay, so where does it need to go right now?
Well, okay, one reason why I thought it might be decent to talk about this subject is the fact that Orphan Black is coming back on the television.
Orphan Black is coming back on the television.
And you love Orphan Black.
I do love Orphan Black.
What are you excited about with the new season of Orphan Black?
Well, this is going to be spoilers for the second season of Orphan Black, so just, like, skip ahead, I don't know, a minute and a half or something like that. So Orphan Black is very fascinating because it asks lots of interesting questions about women and gender roles in particular, and issues of femininity and issues of bodily autonomy and... women pushing against the powers that want to control them, and like questions of how different types of women can be defined and portrayed. And so it's just like and different expressions of the same woman. So like the idea of cloning seems like something that is so controlling, and yet these women have emerged so differently and like shaped their reality and their experiences. And then at the end of season two, they reveal that there was a male clone project.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, so I'm interested. There, I've seen people very concerned that this is going to... because Orphan Black has been such a female-centric... such a Tatiana Maslany-centric show. But, I mean, there are other strong female... like, obviously, she plays multiple characters... but even in addition to her, like, one woman ensemble, there are a number of other very strong female characters. So it's been just such a female-centric narrative, which is so refreshing in television in general and in sci-fi in particular. And there are some people that are concerned that having, with the revelation of a male clone project, this will...
take away from that?
Detract from that. But I'm very interested to see where they're going to go with it, because... feminism is not just about women. It is about gender. It is about intersectionality. It is about...
well, it's structures, right?
Structures, right? And recognizing that those structures are oppressive to everyone, not just to women, and that a very patriarchal gender role breakdown is as restrictive to men who are expected to be held up against that male... ideal.
Well, it creates these toxic expectations, yes, for masculinity and
exactly.
What real masculinity
so
looks like.
So I think it could be very, very, very interesting.
Now, with the last few seasons of Orphan Black...
there's only been two.
But last two seasons of Orphan Black.
Okay.
As they look at issues of bioethics, specifically looking at cloning,
yeah,
have they taken a particularly moralistic stance, or has it been more, here's just what it is, and like...
I think it's been a moralistic stance in the sense of the clones trying to determine their own sense of autonomy.
Yeah.
Right? Because one of the big reveal at the end of season one of Orphan Black is that the... again, spoiler alert, the creators of the genome, like, patented the genome. And, like, the science of this is weird, but, like, it's written in their DNA that they are owned by this corporation.
Yeah.
So it's more a question of that than it is... I mean, there is some degree... like, there is this idea of... I mean, at one point, especially in the first season, they go into this idea of, like, body crafting and...
sort of
like
made
controlled
custom...
evolution.
Oh, okay.
Sort of, and...
like kind of genetic therapy in a way, or...
not so much
gene resequencing sort of stuff,
but yeah, just this idea of like people giving themselves different attributes.
And, okay.
More commodification.
Okay.
In a way, but and that's certainly held up as somewhat problematic. Science run away with itself.
Okay.
To some degree. And I mean, there's definitely this idea of there is the religious cult that sees the clones as abominations.
And that plays a pretty heavy role as far as sort of like, or rather, do you see that they're challenged?
Yeah, they are challenged on that, right? So I mean, I definitely think it's not so much a question of whether clones should exist or cloning itself as bad or good, but more looking at the moral. Once you have these things, what is their moral worth? What is their moral
status?
What is their personhood? And I mean, I think that's where the feminism becomes interesting, because it's sort of using the clones as a stand-in for women.
Okay.
And like, I think there is a degree to which the clones in Orphan Black are a metaphor for women and their relationship to the patriarchy.
Okay, I can see that.
Which is what's so interesting about having this, you know, it's something that was created to be a thing, right? A genome that is a particular single entity. And yet from that becomes so many variations.
Yes.
And I mean, I think that's one of the problems. I mean, I was reading a very interesting article on that, like looking at the particular clones as different female archetypes, and this idea that like within a patriarchal structure, there is only, you know, it's the Smurfette principle. There's only room for one woman, and you know, you have the Smurfs and you have Brainy Smurf and I don't know what Smurfs there are.
Beefy, but
like,
Smurf and...
Yeah, but you have different types, different expressions of personhood, but they are all male expressions. And then one woman.
Yes.
Who is, like, there are different types of people. One of the types of people is woman.
Well, there was that amazing article that I think Carlos shared, which was looking at, of all things, BoJack Horseman.
Mm.
And it was looking at the creator talking about an incident where he and one of the other writers were having a disagreement about a really silly joke. There was going to be, you know, going to the airport and a dog character, because in BoJack Horseman, some of the characters are humans and some of the characters are sort of anthropomorphic animals, which leads to Andrew Reeves' whole theory about how BoJack Horseman exists in a world that is Narnia but without Grace.
Yeah.
That's a whole other subject. Well, next time he's in town, we'll cover that. But one of these, one of the characters was going to be a dog, like, just with its head out the window, like, panting, like, you know, just excitedly, because, you know, dog. And the writer's like, okay, well, it's going to be a female dog, so we'll have, you know, her in a dress and a hat and da-da-da-da-da, you know, for the scene. And the showrunner was like, well, why make her female? Won't that complicate the joke? Why just keep it simpler? And then he sort of realized that being female, he was equating with being something extra.
Yeah.
It wasn't like being a, you know, just being male was default and normal.
Yeah.
And he saw making the character, even for a throwaway gag, female, as this, you know, added on thing. And that struck him. And it's a really great way to think about how characters are, you know, how female characters are used in fiction.
So, I mean, I have to say, so Orphan Black is a show about bioethics, very much. It is a show that's looking at, if you want to see it as a show about cloning, it is a show that kind of takes cloning as a thing we can do, but then what are the moral implications of that, and what are the moral status of the creatures produced as a result of that cloning? And I think it takes a very strong stance that the products of cloning are moral beings and moral agents and deserving of the same moral
rights and respect.
And if anything, it goes into a question of what happens when we commodify human beings.
Yeah.
But So in that way, I would say that Orphan Black is weirdly not a show about cloning at all.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. So it's like that's the premise, but the... Or at least that's sort of the inciting event.
And or at least using the image of cloning as a way of raising a different set of moral and ethical questions.
Yeah, because, I mean, the other big thing, I think...
About persons and how we treat persons.
Yeah, because I think the other big thing where we see cloning dealt with in a really fascinating and multifaceted way is the Vorkosigan book.
Yeah.
And, you know, they definitely are looking at the questions of, you know, what are the legal rights of clones? How are clones approached? And they present you with different worlds that have completely different relationships with clones. You know, you have backwoods Bariar where clones are just like, not, you don't even understand what they are. You have the beta colony where clones are completely folded into society, although they have a kind of... There's a history there, right?
There is a history there, but I also just kind of like the way they are. I like the way they're worked into families and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think they sort of deal with the fact that there was a time when clones were sort of made as almost like in a kind of commodified way, and that's sort of considered tasteless now.
Yeah.
The sort of, you know, really, you know, intense body modding or creating sort of clones for recreation or what have you was sort of seen as kind of gauche, and so clones have just full legal rights. They're just seen as the child of the progenitor. And then you have Jackson's Hole, where clones are meat, and clones are slaves, and there's an entire, you know, organ harvesting industry, and like even more terrifying, the whole kind of life preservation by doing a brain swap. And I guess there's news right now going on because there's a head transplant going on.
Yeah.
So I guess that's not exactly the same thing, but it's touching on that. And the intersection of those, right? It's not just like, okay, let's look at the clone here and here and here, but here's a clone, like, you know, created in Jackson's Hole.
These people, there's travel and communication between these worlds, and they have to come up against one another's ethical systems.
And you have, there's One of the eventually central characters is a clone from this sort of terrible Jackson's Hole, you know, meat market, who, you know, saw his friends, you know, be killed, you know, and then seeing like alien, cold alien eyes behind their eyes after their brains have been swapped out. And then he travels and eventually finds his way into kind of a beta colony family.
Not to mention the way he was abused himself.
Well, that's its own other... crazy, you know, again, this idea of, being seen as a thing, being seen as a weapon, as a product, and then going somewhere where everyone, or at least enough people are like, no, you're one of us, you're family, you know, we love you, you know, like, and making that kind of, and how that was a torture for him, right? And it's really well done, and it's played out.
I need to read that again. I need to read Memory Game again.
Well, and it's a great juxtaposition.
Not Memory Game.
And it's a great juxtaposition between, you know, this character and Miles, you know, who's has his own sort of neuroses and own kind of issues. That played really well. Another moving away from clones though, but keeping with Vorkosigan, was Ethan of Athos.
Mm.
Ethan of Athos played with the sort of bioethics idea in a really fascinating way, and it was, I mean, it's a complete standalone from the rest of the series, but the idea is, given that there's a kind of cloning technology and external uterine replicators, which, you know, a way to give birth without physically having to carry a child, Lois McMaster Bujold imagined, okay, well, what would happen if you could have a society that was all men? That, you know, could take this technology, could take everything, and then separate themselves off. And I guess, given my interest in the bizarre worlds of the MRAs and the men going their own way and whatnot, I see an interesting parallel, although I don't think that was quite... that was not on the horizon, so Bujold didn't sort of have that in her mind when she was devising this planet. Otherwise, it would have been a lot more trilbied and terrible. Instead, it's just a kind of cut off, almost monastic, but still functioning society. And looking at you know, how they deal with each other and how their sexuality is kind of policed, or at least their ability to reproduce is policed. And that's a big theme in science fiction.
Yeah.
You know, population control. George R. R. Martin's Tough Voyaging deals, its main story is all about a planet that is in danger because of overpopulation and threatening to spill out and, you know, cause intergalactic conflict because they haven't found a way to control population growth. And I think, you know, maybe I'm just not hanging out in those crowds anymore, but I don't see the same kind of population fears.
Well, I don't think that, I mean, I think that was a particular 70s and 80s thing. I think there've actually been some studies that have looked at overpopulation is not, as a society and like a scientific community, I don't think the same fears are there about overpopulation that there were 30 years ago.
It's more distribution and sort of environmental impact and things like that.
On the subject of clone harvesting organs.
Oh, sure.
One interesting book is The Never Let Me Go.
Oh, right.
Which is the same author who wrote Remains of the Day, who I've forgotten, but...
We will put in our show notes.
Anywho, but it's an interesting look at... because you talk about Jackson Hole, where the clones are treated terribly and used for organ harvesting and whatnot. And... it's pretty obvious, this isn't really a spoiler for the book, that it is a book about clones being raised to have their organs harvested.
Yeah.
It's many things. It's a meditation on mortality. Even the clones who are, the central characters are just looking at, a temporary extension of their lives, not even necessarily a reprieve from being harvested for their organs. So it's just, they accept that this is the life that they have been given, and this is the lifespan they have, that they grow up as children, and by the time they're in their, mid-20s, they'll have their organs harvested. It's very moving. It's very, there's no raging against the dying of the light.
Okay.
In it, right?
It's not about trying to overthrow the system.
No. And once they realize what their purpose is, they just accept that this is the light. This is what they exist for, and this is the lifespan they have. And so it's just a question of what they do with it, right? And it's very interesting because, they have time. It's not like they just, when their number gets called up, they're taken and killed and harvested. They, have their first offering, and then they convalesce.
Mm.
And then they are called in for another one. So the organs are taken one at a time, and so it's just they slowly
kind of diminish.
And, it's a question of whether they're going to be able to get three or four organs out of them. It's strange. But I want to say the whole premise is that there is a group of these clones who are raised in what would seem to be an incredibly prestigious boarding school.
Yeah.
And that's pretty, if you've seen the trailer based on the movie, that's what you see right there. But they never go for holidays and so you know there's something strange about their situation. But what gets revealed, and once they effectively graduate from school, they're sent off to these homes with other, they just go live independently as late adolescents, young adults, until they're called up to start making their organ donations. So they have this, period of 4 or 5 years where they just kind of live in houses together and...
sort of have this communal existence.
And as they leave their school and are kind of assigned houses with people from other places, they realize how unique their background was. And that there are these other clones were in much harsher conditions and grew up always knowing what their outcome was going to be.
Oh, I see.
And the secret of their upbringing is that they were in this special experimental school to try, and as they find out that it was an experiment of mercy to try to give the clones a childhood. Could they be raised in innocence? Could they be raised in kindness and have an actual childhood? And ultimately there's, one could argue the book is saying that is in the end more cruel.
Oh, okay.
to paint over the reality in this kind of facade. But really, I mean, the whole book is about coming out of innocence and coming to understand mortality, and it's
just in a really hyper-intense situation.
way, but being that same process that we all go through in life. But anyway, that's...
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting look at the difference of something trying not to be Jackson's Hole, but just a veneer on the same reality.
No, precisely. Well, and that's what I really like about stories about bioethics. I mean, when they look at the personal, when they look at, again, almost from the inside, as opposed to just, you know, is this something we should be doing, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of 1950s paternalistic, you know, just like, no, you're going against God and man. I mean, I always found, you know, reading Frankenstein, I always got so indignant because I see it as a story of child abuse.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the first act of the creation of the monster is the father just rejecting him and just kicking him out. And the monster eventually becomes sort of murderous and terrible. But, you know, it's an abuse story.
Yeah.
and it's hard to have a lot of sympathy for Dr. Frankenstein from my, you know, position of, you know, moral authority. So I like, you know, it's another scene that really bothered me in an episode of Next Generation is, I want to say it's possibly Up the Long Staircase, which is the, or Up the Long Ladder, which possibly has the horrible space Irish.
Mm.
They go down to a planet where that's all full of clones and their numbers are diminishing, and so they clone some of the crew.
Oh, okay.
And Riker finds like that he has these clones that are like being kind of processed in these vats, and he destroys them. Like he's just like, oh, this is awful, zap zap zap, and he sort of destroys these clones. I'm like, those are like people, dude. Like that's like,
yeah,
you know, it's. That's you. But I mean, it's I don't know.
Well, it's your genetic material, but do you have a right to it?
Yeah. And so I remember seeing that, and it just wasn't problematized, right? It wasn't like people, but I feel in other episodes where they have dealt with clones, they've been like, no, this clone is just like any other person. So it's one of those weird, jarring juxtapositions where there's no sort of internal consistency, but it's Star Trek, so I suppose I shouldn't be going too overboard with it. But, I mean, Gattaca, I guess, is the other really big sort of pop cultural bioethic, you know, are we doing what we should be doing? And that's somewhat from the outside.
I don't know Gattaca.
Oh, okay. Do you know the premise of Gattaca at all?
No.
Okay. So the premise of Gattaca is in the not too distant future, sort of day after tomorrow kind of setting. By a sort of genetic therapy and the ability to kind of resequence genes is not only sort of possible, but is prominent. And, you know, it's the sort of situation where they can just, they go through what the act, what, you know, whatever, you know, embryos you are potentially able to make. So they're not going to, you know, if you have no green eyes in your family history, you're not going to wind up with green eyes.
Yeah.
But if you have the potential for green, then you can say, I want to have green and I want to be cleared of these health issues and so on and so forth. And so almost everyone in this next sort of generation, like, doesn't have health issues, is incredibly attractive, is screened for a lot of these big issues, except Ethan Hawke isn't. So it's about Ethan Hawke. His parents decided to just have a child the old-fashioned way, and he is just a regular guy. But because they can do all this screening at his birth, they took a prick of his blood and went through and be like, all right, chance of heart attack at age 47, you know, like, you know, 68% chance of like this disease, like 85%. And so he's essentially barred from a whole bunch of professions because essentially insurance wise. And the big thing is he wants to go. There's a sort of a space program and he wants to travel and travel out at that. But because he's at this risk for kind of heart conditions and things like that, he can't.
Mm.
So he enacts a scheme and takes on the identity of Jude Law.
Oh.
So Jude Law is one of these perfect people, which is why they, you know, they cast Jude Law. But he breaks his legs in, or he gets paralyzed in this big accident. And so essentially, yeah, Ethan Hawke begins to take his identity and has to, you know, to keep vials of his blood with him.
Oh, wow.
And has to kind of put his, like, little vials of his dandruff and hair, and he has to be, like, he has to scrub himself down because they, you know, they're able to kind of find genes and, you know, on any piece of, like, spare skin or anything. Right. And he has to put in these, like, contacts to make sure that, you know, that he matches all the eye color and whatnot. And, yeah, and it's this interesting kind of this question of this is a society where we've done everything possible for our children to make our children as healthy as possible, to, you know, spare them from these diseases, to spare them from life of misery. But there is still tragedy in the world, and there's this unfairness of this, you know, this guy who is very capable. He's able to do everything, but he is not screened. He has not been fixed.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's a fascinating look at that. And it was, you know, it's very, if you go back and watch it, it's very 90s Uma Thurman and just, well, Ethan Hawke, I think, by himself, puts a big 90s stamp on it. But it's a quiet movie, and it's an introspective movie, and it was definitely something that you would watch in college and sort of feel smart. But yeah, I don't know. I like that very personal element to it. And I think that's very useful when looking at stories and looking at fiction that deals with bioethics. And I mean, because it's something that's constantly, you know, again, like there's the head transplant stuff, but I mean, we're dealing with the expansion of euthanasia, and you know, right to die is starting to become, you know, that kind of movement is becoming stronger and stronger. And you know, reading my book, you know, The Far From the Tree book, that deals a lot with these questions of parents wanting to make their children's lives better, you know, whether that's cochlear implant for deaf children or trying to find, you know, certain therapies for autism or Down syndrome. And then there's the sort of darker side of that, which is kind of screening for autism, screening for Down syndrome. Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of, there's an entire, you know, entire part of the kind of neurodiversity movement, you know, which is saying, you know, we are being killed off, you know, or we're being aborted off before we have a chance to even be. And that just, and it opens up, and, you know, a lot of questions about,
absolutely,
about, you know, this right to, you know, right to life, or right to, not necessarily right to life, but, you know, just what we're using our technology for. I mean,
no, I think what we're using our technology for,
like with this, you know, the whole awful sort of sex selective abortions.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, you know, that's straight out of a horror story, you know, sort of, you know, a kind of a sci-fi story, right? You know, society's deciding that women or girls have lesser value, and having the technology to, you know, determine that and sort of engineer their societies in that way. And I don't know, it would be interesting to see some stories like that and stories that are closer to where we are now.
Yeah.
Take sort of prominence. I guess they're too hot and too kind of close to home. But that's something that I think could be interesting to see as we go forward.
Absolutely.
So any other thoughts about the nature of bioethics in
film? Well, I mean, I think it's a huge topic, and I don't think we're going to cover it all now. I think we raised... So I think it's about raising questions, right? It's really, really easy, especially from a position of faith or religion, to try to come up with really black and white answers. All right, especially, you know, in Canada, we now have assisted suicide that has been deemed... Has it actually been deemed legal?
I think
they haven't made any legislation about it. The Supreme Court of Canada
has, I think, just, they defended the rights for...
Yeah, so, I mean, the legislation around it has not been drafted, but... it has, like, the right to die has been determined. And so that has obviously sparked a lot of very, very, very intense conversation, particularly in the church. It might actually be the topic of that interfaith panel I'm on in a few weeks.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Which I'm sort of hoping for, I'm pushing for food.
But
I could end up in an interfaith panel.
Either way.
Discussing this. Like, I am not competent to address this topic. Would you like to listen to my podcast? Anyway, where am I going with this? Oh, that it's just, from my perspective, it's just, if Christianity gives me any guidance on that, it is in the messiness of the human condition.
Sure.
And that it's very hard to come up with a absolute black and white answer that fits every circumstance.
Sure.
It is really hard, you know, we can talk about redemptive suffering. And I think as a society, we are problematically adverse to suffering. We don't want to engage with suffering. We don't know how to engage with suffering. On the other hand, and I hear a lot of my colleagues using that language, right? We need to have a place for redemptive suffering.
Well, when it's that top down, right?
Right, when it's top down.
You need to suffer to validate my faith.
And it's hard to, yeah, and it's hard to tell someone that who is actually suffering. And, you know, the reality of that. And so, and you know, and then you have the problem of the fear of people who don't have as much agency, the elderly, or people who are
who have mental illness.
I mean, much as you were saying with you know, children who are aborted before birth because they have defects, right? It's hard to say. It's hard to tell someone exactly what they should do in that situation. On the other hand, as Christians, we do have a value for all life, not just neurotypical life. And there is a concern around assisted suicide that those with the least agency are at the greatest risk of being victims of that. And so it's just a really tricky question, right?
Yeah.
And I think one of the things science fiction does is it proposes scenarios that allow us to explore those questions.
Hopefully,
in all their complexity and nuance, I guess is where I'm going with that.
Yeah, and I think I want to just reiterate that I think it does a lot better job when it looks at it from the more personal, from the more human.
Yeah. And I mean, I think at the end of the day, as Christians, our attitude towards these bioethical questions, especially as our science adapts more and more, is to be mindful and to think about the purpose and what we are trying to achieve with this technology and with these. And the question of just because we can do something doesn't mean we should do something.
Yeah.
And ultimately, at the end of the day, our calling as Christians is to support life. And to support life that cannot defend itself.
I agree.
However we define that.
Indeed.
So.
All right. Well, on this nice light.
Yeah, seriously.
Post-Easter discussion. That'll be it from us. Hopefully we will have some exciting news regarding the crossover Nexus in the next little while. There's some movings on that front. Otherwise, we'll try to come up with something actually a bit lighter and fluffier for next time. From the world of faith, family, fandom, in no particular order, geek out, y'all.
I thought I'd find a kindred spirit in you. Until all 33, all things I was into. We formed a duo, bought the t-shirts, I shared my water with you. It was a dream for me, but sometimes dreams fall through. Bastard in, we were chatting on Google like we always do. I said something about the final five arrow, you got so confused. I said, where are you? You said the start of season two. What do you mean? How could you not have finished BST? I said frack, frack, fracking, frack. You said what's that, what's that? I can't believe that you didn't finish BST. I said why? You said I just got busy. As an act of contrition, watch them all now or you can't go home again. It's a litmus test, and if you don't pass, then it's 6 degrees of separation. You could tie me up or tie me down, you could burn me flesh and bone. I will bring down the hand of God, yeah, the gauntlet has been thrown. Oh, 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 how can it be? How could you not have finished BST? I said frack, frack, fracking, frack. You said what's that, what's that? I can't believe that you didn't finish BST. I said why? You said I just got busy. How about Colonial Deo? Tell me, does that sound familiar? Last gleam of cobalt, oh, you've seen that one, you must remember. How can you bear the thought of not knowing what happens after? I tell you who the Cylons are, but you'd insist, no spoilers. Just come clean, just go ahead and finish BST. Ooh, frack, frack, fracking, frack. You said, what's that, what's that? I just can't believe you didn't finish BST. I said why? You said I just got busy. Just got busy. Just got busy.